flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Back here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan. Hope you're enjoying your lunch break right now. Well, or if you're maybe having a dinner break right now. Depends on the shift that you're working. 877-881-1053. Why do you think Dane Dunning didn't work last year? We'll get into that in just a moment. But Kevin, before we do, Mike, January 31st is a birthday for greatness.
Today's the 31st?
Today is the 31st. Nolan Ryan, Ernie Banks, and Jackie Robinson all share the same birthday. And I think that's three of like the best that you could bring up in baseball.
One of them still alive.
Can you name him, Kevin?
Nolan.
Nice! He did it, Alec.
Two of them born in Texas.
Can you name both of them?
Nolan and not Jackie Robinson.
Ernie? It was Ernie Banks, right? Yeah. Do you have any more facts, Mike?
Jackie Robinson, first ever African-American player in the major league.
That's a fact. That is a fact. Now, we had Dane Dunning during spring training last year. I'd love to talk to him again. I really enjoyed the conversation with him.
I'm with you. I wanted to, if we can, talk to the Rangers part about it just a second.
Okay.
So, Mike, I brought this up because you were asking, like, just in general, all of us, are we maybe too bullish on the Rangers? And so I found a couple of articles, like from reputable type sources, talking about how much better they think the Rangers specifically will be. Buster Olney talked about this. MLB.com had a story about it. And they have the Rangers as their top team, destined to be better. And I realize it's better than 78 wins. So take that for what you will. And Buster Olney listed the Rangers as the fourth team most likely to get better. I don't know what that looks like tangibly, because, like, let's say you win 83 games. Well, that's better, but you're not going to make the playoffs.
Right.
So when people say better, like, are we talking it needs to be at least 10 games, probably, give or take, maybe 8?
10's a big increase.
It is.
So I guess 5.
Okay.
Now you just named the 5, 83. That would be better, but that would be a very disappointing season for the Rangers. The thing that I hope is you don't look and go, gosh, we had 20 losses this year where we had a lead by 3 or less going into the 8th inning and we lost 20 of those games.
Right. Didn't,
like, yeah, they tied it up and we came back and won. That's not even counting those.
Yeah.
Is that we needed 6 outs to to win this game, and we 20 times failed to get those six outs. That's the one thing that scares me about, not saying you would win all of those games. You're going to blow games. That's going to happen. But I'm just scared right now. At what rate are you going to be able to close those games out?
I feel like also, was there a time when they were then where MLB owners were like, well, we'll just pay all the starters to go as long as they can, and we don't need to worry about closers and relief pitchers?
Well, I mean, when my dad played in the 70s, okay, you really were like, you have five failed starters and then one guy you think can get, and really wasn't even the last three outs. You looked at him as like the last six outs.
Okay.
So a reliever was, I'm seriously asking, the thought always was a reliever is most likely kind of a failed starter.
Yes.
Man.
Yeah.
That's tough.
These are our best failed starters.
Yeah.
You want them to be something. But
you're still in Major League Baseball.
And doesn't Dane Dunning kind of fit that, you know, and Andrew Heaney kind of fit that where you were like, not, you know, you can kind of rely on Heaney, but we can't get a win for the guy.
Somebody's going to get really lucky with Heaney as long as he's lasting. Like, he's better than Max Scherzer. But because of Max Scherzer's name, he got $15.5 million. I'll be interested to see. We don't know what Andrew Heaney's negotiations are like and with what teams. At least it's been very quiet on the Andrew Heaney front. But whoever gets him, I think, is going to be very happy with his versatility and feels like usually, at least with us, his health.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That he's going to be available for 162, and you can use him in multiple ways, and he's going to give you different ways to help you win.
Now, this is going to sound like a really broad question, Mike, but better than just about anybody I know. Probably anybody I know. Sorry, Derek. Can give me or at least the second best. You can give me a good answer. One of the things that Dane Dunning said is he's made a lot of changes, and you're always like, sure, everybody makes changes. But he said, I was landing very far over the last year, and I was really losing my hips. I was wondering either A, if you want to dive into that specifically, or B, you can just talk about the mechanics of pitching and how important your hips are to it. I know that's like kind of a fun basic question, but
if you're older, you'll remember Roger Pavlik, that's a former Ranger, or and I always get them mixed up. It was Jeff Weaver with the Angels.
I think that is.
Because there's right. Jared and Jeff. Is it Jared? Ooh, I think, man. Jared was with the Angels.
I think it was Jared.
And Jeff Weaver like ended up being kind of, he went over to the Yankees, and that's when it all kind of really fell apart. You have this crossfire where if you think of Jared Weaver or you think of Roger Pavlik, and Dane Dunning doesn't want to be this, but when Dane goes wrong, you start stepping more towards the right-hander's batter's box. So now it takes a lot for your hips to get where they need to go. And so what happens is your ball starts really moving more right to left as a right-handed pitcher than it does where you want sink on it or you want some downward action on it. And so what Dane Dunning can do when he gets wrong is he starts stepping towards the right-hander's batter's box, which then his hips have to work very hard to try to get towards home plate because your body's going to be going towards that batter's box. And so to get the ball over, all you have is sideways movement. Most hitters will tell you, if it stays on the same plane and it's just going left to right and that's consistently how your pitch is always going, that's very easy. I just have to get in the right path and now just make sure the barrel's in the right angle. But if I'm starting my swing and now the ball starts moving down and across or down and in, it's very tough for me to get the barrel to the ball. So he wants to keep his momentum going directly towards home plate. And then you'll see at times Jonah Heim. I don't know how Higgy will do it. This will be the first time ever for him to catch him. But he'll sometimes almost give you like a runway, like he's a plane.
Yeah.
With the lights, like, come on in. And what Heim is doing is he's telling him, get in your line, stay in your tunnel. Now there's tunneling pitches, which we'll talk about, but there's tunneling your body, and you want to stay kind of, this is maybe a little bit too extreme, but you want to stay in between that rubber. You do not want to get outside that rubber. And Dane is talking about how he could get outside of that rubber. And I don't know if he said this in the article or not, but he's mentioned it. And I know other people, he was out of shape. So he was not in the best shape last year, which when you're out of shape physically, like you've put on a few extra pounds and maybe you're not as strong in your ab area or your back.
Or your lower legs.
Sometimes that will then cause you to not be as strong in keeping your line that you need to keep.
Are you surprised at all? Are you guys surprised at all to hear that? Like, I appreciate, because Dane Dunning's very honest and he'll break things down for you. He just seems like the kind of person who's like, I have to optimize every possible thing I can to
Yes, it was a longer season. He had a baby. There was like a lot of things going on in his longer season, pitching till November 1st. So you have less of an off season, and then there's more stress on you in the off season after winning a championship because your hometown people want to celebrate you. Your agent wants you to sign more autographs, and because there's this opportunity to make more money in the off season. Then you have other events with the Texas Rangers that they've put on to celebrate the event, and you have a baby. And so it's the lack of sleep. It's just like, I'm starving. I need to eat something. And I'm not saying he was like super out of shape, but
yeah,
to your point, he has, I dealt with this. He's way better than I ever was. He has below average stuff for a major leaguer.
Which means not a lot of room for...
Right. So he cannot... He has to be mechanically sound. He has to be in physically great shape where he doesn't fatigue on the mound. Because if DeGrom, who's a skinny dude, if he gets physically fatigued, oh no, he went from throwing 100 to 97. When Dane Dunning gets physically fatigued... He goes from throwing 92, let's say, to 89. That can be a big difference, and then the ball gets flatter on him. So I do expect him to be maybe not the 23 pitcher. I think the Rangers have much more depth than that 23 team does in their rotation, so I don't think he's really going to start much for you this year, but he needs to be a valuable guy pitching somewhere between those fourth and sixth innings.
A few years ago, his hip was the thing that was bothering him, too.
True.
He had the hip injury.
Oh, yeah,
and he wasn't able to step as far towards the plate. That's one of the things Mike was talking about. I know he wants to go straight, like, towards the catcher, and we've seen Heim. I've seen him do that, like, reach to me. You don't shorten it, because whenever you shorten it, you're losing a lot of what you're trying to accomplish. But he needs to reach out sometimes, and whenever you're a little heavier, you do tend to do a shortcut on yourself. You won't necessarily go
unintentionally
as far out. Yeah, your body just physically isn't prepared to capture that.
I know you just said maybe innings four through six, potentially, give or take. How difficult do you think that is, either player or to kind of get the message of, hey, I know you want to start, but this is where I need you. Like, I know everyone will like pitch in for the team, but it's still got to hurt your ego, pride, whatever the case is.
Yes. Yes. But Dane Dunning, this is his job the rest of his life, as in he's going to have to.
Okay.
I hope he does, because he's an awesome dude. I hope he gets a 3-year $15 million contract. Like, I hope it'd be per year, but let's just put him at $5 million per year. I don't know. Dane Dunning's probably one of those guys in his career that could get a 10-year major league career, but it will be a lot of times on one-year deals, or like a one-year deal with a team option type of deal. And I think he understands that. He'll probably start a few games for you, but I just think he's going to have that role of, and I better do it right, because whether it's Jacob Latz, Cole Wynn, Pennington, I know I'm naming the lefties we named the other day, there's going to be guys that are going to start off in AAA. I think Dunning will start on the major league team in the pen that are going to be wanting to take his job. That's the tough thing about it. You're friends, but you're trying to take that guy's livelihood away from him, even though you're his friend.
His sinker, Kevin, was one of baseball's best individual pitches two seasons ago, according to Baseball Savant, the third most valuable pitch of its type. So him specifically in what we all considered one of the best, like, we loved him that year. He was awesome.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a
sleeper. Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Anytime you needed to call upon him, he did. It was an average pitch last season. Mike, it did drop from 89.7 to 88.4. So, like, that specific pitch made it more hittable. And that made it more one of those things that he was like, all right, now I'm seeing more go over the fence. And now I'm seeing more doubles driven into the gaps. And that's not good. And Bochy's not going to let that last long.
Yeah. The two things you want to watch for Dane Dunning when you're watching him pitch is, two, you don't want him to be up in the zone. I said two first, but you don't want him to be up in the zone because he does not survive well up there. And you don't want to see him missing, let's say, down and away to righties a lot off of the plate where Jonah's having to reach across. And it's not, because that means he's now getting that sideways motion and he's not keeping his line.
Do you try to overcompensate then whenever you're pitching? Because if he steps out too much to the left-hander's box, he's going to open up too much. So really become, I mean, it is repetition.
Well, what happens is when you get your wrong line, you have to open up, or you have to now, for his left side, his glove side, he has to throw that elbow hard
to try to get
back online. Now, Roger Pavlik, Jared Weaver, what they could do is they would do it, but then you have to have really strong abs to then hold it. So I got to open up, but then I got to stay strong and stay there. And when Dane goes wrong, and probably like a Pavlik or a Weaver would, their arm keeps opening up, and now I'm opening up. The one thing that can be tough to do, especially on your shoulder, is if you start off and instead of stepping towards your line, you do step open.
Okay.
That usually, in a general sense, will put more stress on your shoulder.
Now, Kevin, Jared Weaver was a fantastic pitcher. And I always found it weird that he did cross planes the way that he did. Yeah. But one thing he didn't like was pitching in Texas. That was the one advantage we had whenever it came to not having a roof on this thing. That dude's lips would dry out and he would be ticked off and he would be cussing
at
everything.
Once he looked like a drug addict or
like a crack fiend up there, just like, oh, I need my fix right now. And he hated pitching here during the hot. And I was always excited because that was good for the Rangers on that. So I'm very hopeful for Dane Dunning. What do we have any other Rangers things we need to work on before we get to spring training, Kevin?
I mean,
before pitchers and catchers report?
Sure. It goes back to what Mike said his biggest fear is. What I think the biggest fear is for most people on this team is they're going to look back and be like, dang it, I wish we would have had the money or trade assets or whatever to get a closer.
Are we just assuming we're going to score 12 runs a game, or how are we? Because last year kind of freaked me out that we couldn't score.
But I don't think you're in that position. But what I'm afraid of is you're going to be in a lot of close games. And then at 4-3, 8-7, whatever you think that looks like.
I'll tell you what's going to be interesting is, let's say, the first 2 weeks of the season. In August and September, Bruce Bochy finally, I think, said, screw it. We're not going to hit home runs. We're not going to hit doubles. We're going to have to... What's that?
I'm sorry. I coughed.
Oh.
And I covered the cough with my hand like you should as a human, but I didn't turn off the mic. I'm so sorry.
Is he going to manage like August and September where they started trying to steal bases more?
Yeah.
And like, we can't live for the double and home run. We don't do that. Our team isn't doing that. Now, Lankford got really hot in September. Or is he going to go back to, no, in 23, the way we hit the ball, and now that I have, hopefully, opening day, Josh Jung healthy, Jock Peterson in the lineup, like, are we just going to go to everybody stand on their base and wait for the double and wait for the home run, and that's how we're going to murder teams? I don't like that.
I don't either.
I understand the power that they potentially have, I would like to be aggressive early in the year and then try to bring it back if you need to on the bases, rather than let's watch for 2 months and see if we have an OPS or a slugging that is top five in Major League Baseball.
Yeah. I'm very looking forward to getting out to Arizona, getting out to Surprise, talking with Boach, seeing what he thinks needs to be fixed with this thing, or if he's like, you know what, we got this sucker ready to rock.
Are you looking forward to that as much as you're looking forward to going to the Omni today in Frisco to potentially see the G-Bag Nation? Not potentially. If you go, you will see that.
Go to the Omni. Check out the G-Bag Nation. They're going to high-five you, might even have some drinks with you. I know a bunch, three of those guys will drink, definitely. And if you get Broadus rolling, just imagine what G-Bag is going to be like today. All right, coming up next here on the KNC Masterpiece, we hit the expressway. 40 minutes of uninterrupted sports and fun content in your ear holes. The Combo Platter, movie and music edition. Give us a sports opinion and then what song movie combination always goes together for you. And we also have Mike Likes It next on The Fan. Back here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan, we do have a giveaway coming up here. Whenever Kevin's ready, he gets to scream it out today. Good luck, man.
That is a terrible idea.
We will have the giveaway whenever Kevin throws up his hand and says that's when we're doing it. So we'll let you know.
Can I ask you a quick Forgiveness Friday, even though it passed?
You can try.
Okay.
Well, because your voice.
That's true. So I think I'm about to have to message somebody and ask them if there's any chance they want to pick a different wrestling event. Because we were supposed to do the Royal Rumble tomorrow.
And sickness.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And, like, he told me what kind of
pizza.
That's true.
That's
marriage, he told me what kind of pizza he wants and everything. He's jazzed up. And I'm not going to. I just, like, reschedule, but feels kind of like a D move because the event is tomorrow. But I didn't know that this was happening until this morning.
I think it's a fair conversation with the person. And they're probably listening, They're probably hearing this right now, and they're like, oh, great, Kevin's trying to get
Get them some extra swag or something.
Yeah, maybe so, but I think it's fair because of the state you're currently in physically. And if you feel bad, like, that's another thing. You don't want them to feel bad.
I do not.
Man, can you imagine being the reason that somebody got sick?
Can I just tell you, I see what you're doing, for the record. I do not have a fever. I feel okay, aside from this.
All right. You don't have a fever.
Oh my God. If you guys get, I'm going to be really sad.
How often do you get fevers, Kevin?
I don't know. In the morning?
What?
Fever all through the day?
All right. Right now, it's time for the Combo Platter, ladies and gentlemen. Tell us your sports opinion and then give us a song movie combination that always goes together for you. 877-881-1053.
Before the sports opinion part, can I just tell you the song that, like, is my easy number
one? This is the reason that this
exactly
topic popped
exactly. So this is cut number 11, and the song popped on for not this movie, and I was like, hearing this song in any other context besides the end of this movie feels weird to me.
But what we found out is that each one of us is a brain and an athlete.
See, you get it.
And a basket case, a princess,
and a criminal.
Does that answer your question? Sincerely yours, The Breakfast Club.
And then Corey just did it. Judd Nelson pumps his fist. They stop it right there.
Turn it back up. Did you have more of it? Did you cut it off there?
I labeled it the ending of the movie. If it's an actual scene that had, like, conversation, I wanted to get the scene of the movie so people could understand it.
I will say, is it Pitch Perfect, the first one where she does the mashup with that? I loved that mashup. I thought it was awesome.
It's impossible for me, or I would guess lots of people, to hear that song and not think about Judd Nelson or The Breakfast Club or John Hughes or whatever.
Even in Pitch Perfect, he throws his hand up as an homage to that because she had never seen The Breakfast Club before.
Outrageous.
So, did you have a sports opinion or did you have another song that you wanted to throw in your conversation here?
I do have a sports opinion, but I would like to go in the right order and give another song if that's possible.
Sure.
My sports opinion is...
Oh, Mike looks upset. He was like,
I'm sorry.
It was my turn.
My sports...
I was just looking at a box score. It's amazing.
My sports opinion is, I think Reddit is going to help get Justin Tucker punished.
Okay.
So, look, you can take whatever you want from this, but...
Reset where Justin Tucker's situation.
So Justin Tucker, the accusation is that he was inappropriate with six different masseuses. So there's multiple threads on Reddit, which have now picked up steam because like some, like the Daily Mail in the UK picked this up and everything. There's threads in there or comments from like 2021, if that is to be believed correctly, or somebody like made an offhand comment about Justin Tucker and then somebody else is like, yeah, he ain't going back to that place, I guarantee you.
Oh, really?
And so like, I don't think Reddit is like for sure going to be the end all be all, but I wonder if they'll go back. Will they try to talk to those people? Did those people know the masseuses? Did they blah, 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 blah.
Interesting.
And so mine is cut number six. And I just want everybody to know that my wife watched this movie with me a long time ago and she hates it. So, some people will probably think of Ric Flair too, but it's 2001: A Space Odyssey. My wife hated that movie.
I've never seen
it. I don't think I've seen it either.
I do not think you would like it.
You think I would like it? I like movies.
I think you might. I mean,
we get paid by Odyssey.
Mike,
but not the space. Not the Space Odyssey.
I think you get agitated because it's not a silent movie. But the first words don't get said until there's 19 minutes in.
It's like Raw, the opposite of Raw. All they do is say words.
Yes, true.
Wrestle! What is the movie about?
Is it about space?
I mean, I know this sounds like a stupid question, but...
And a radio company?
So essentially... good. There's these two astronauts, and they have a super-powered AI-like computer... And they're going to investigate like some weird anomaly in space that they're like, hey, what's happening here? And it might be an answer to a whole lot of bigger questions.
Like how we're going to Mars.
Yeah, but they go even farther. They go towards Jupiter.
Dude, that's where the diamonds are, right? The diamonds are on Jupiter, I believe. Or hold on, which one has the rings?
Well, Jupiter also has rings.
One of them rains diamonds. You mean Saturn? Yeah, one of them rains diamonds. So that's all I need to know there. By the way, according to multiple sources, Cowboys interviewed Detroit running backs coach Scotty Montgomery for their offensive coordinator opening. So add him to the list. Clayton Adams, Kevin Coger. Montgomery, that would be interesting to take Montgomery, who was obviously friends with David Montgomery during this time, but a guy that was with the Detroit Lions running game. You know, like he was in part of what their running game was all about. Shoddy doesn't need a real offensive coordinator. Yeah. He needs somebody that can do some special things the Cowboys need.
I always feel like, how would this feel if all I can think of is one pitcher that's a manager right now is Bud Black? How would I feel if, like, we're going to hire you as the pitching coach, but the manager is the pitching coach, and he's going to do all the bullpens, and he's going to make sure that his guy is ready, and he's going to put the game plan together.
At least Schottenheimer's... Yeah. Qualified to describe that to him. He's like, hey, here's what I did.
Yeah, I do.
I don't know.
I do feel like he'll do a good job of delegating. I really do feel he's seen enough of that. He's seen enough of how coaches manage that. So I think he'll do a good job of that. Mike, would you like to drop yours?
My sports opinion, after talking bad about Bronny, him and his father combined for 29 points last night.
Nice.
They played the Washington Wizards, and they beat them 134-96. I don't think the Wizards are going to win another game.
By the way, that was another game where at halftime, it was a massacre. It was like 30 points at halftime.
They beat, because I'm looking at this, LA outscored them by 13 in the first quarter and 20 in the second quarter. So it was a 33-point game at halftime. Bronny did make a shot. He went 1-for-6, and he made all his free throws. So he had 5 points, which 1-for-6... Let me click on his name here. Is he up to 10%? Let's see. This is going to be a big one, guys, as we're looking at the stats for Bronny James,
who so
definitely deserves
it. I have him 9.1%.
He's getting close to 10% shooting a basketball in this league.
And the reason why I think some people, and it got a little bit better, but somebody said at one point you could have shot 1-for-15 and that would have improved his shooting percentage.
Yeah. I said that yesterday because I heard that from somebody else, but... I feel bad for him because they were showing on the highlight. They're talking to Shams Charania on the Pat McAfee show. Yep. And they were talking about trade rumors and stuff, but they showed that he made a layup last night. and made a basket, and LeBron is celebrating it on the bench because they're up by 40 or whatever.
Yeah.
And then like somebody's like tackling Bron, like, he did it. And I'm like, and you can just see Bron's Bronny's trying his best.
Sure.
He's not equipped to play in this league, not anywhere close. And I just feel bad. So my opinion is, I feel bad for Bronny James. He knows it right now. This is tough to say because he knows that he's kind of getting laughed at. And even on the Lakers bench, as his dad is celebrating him by demanding that he's on the team and demanding he get NBA minutes, that like, even like, he just has to feel, when you don't belong. I'll be honest here. On that stage, man, I'm up there with David Murphy and Elvis Andrus, and they're like in some former famous Texas Rangers. And I'm like, I'm not a fan. Like, I was like, you don't need to say that, man. Like, I get it, man. Murphy over here and Elvis, like, awesome. Former Texas Rangers, led you to your first ever American League championship, back-to-back World Series appearances. Like, they have a lot on their resume. I do not. And I know who I am. Bronny knows who he is too, but I know his dad is forcing him onto this team, and he's not going to say no. And the players on his team know he's not anywhere close to being a player in the league. His coaches know, and he knows. And I feel bad for Bronny in this, because maybe someday he is going to be a legitimate 15-minute a dude guy that can come off the bench in the league. But he's a maybe a starting player. Like, people were saying this, and I don't know this. You watch college basketball more, and it's always tough to do this. Like, people are saying he wouldn't even start on Duke's team. Like, if you had a transfer from USC.
He definitely would not start on Duke's team.
Like, yeah, they were just saying, like, there's multiple teams that if Bronny would have transferred from USC he would still be coming off the bench as, like, a 15-minute role player in college.
And that's where, if he got his 3 or 4 years, work your way up potentially into the starting lineup, and then by the time you finish your junior year, people are like, okay, I see it. I see how you fit in the NBA.
So I feel bad for the kid. He's 20 years old, and I guess I shouldn't, you know, it's like, in a way, you shouldn't feel bad for him. Like, he's a multi-millionaire without ever doing a thing in his life. I mean, his dad has been unbelievable. His dad's probably a billionaire at this point.
Or will be.
But I feel like this is just all getting shoved in our faces. Like, look, he's playing and you're going to have to deal with it. And he knows, Bronny knows he shouldn't be doing this. He should be in the G League. He's learning. He deserves minutes in the G League to try to learn. But anyways, I just feel bad for the kid. All right. So, movie and the song that go together for me. Look, I'm a sucker, and I'm not even sure if this is my favorite Rocky song, but this is the one most known for Rocky. Yeah. This is Rocky 3.
And they used it again in 4.
Because
they were like, well, everybody loves this.
Yeah, because this might have been a number one song in the United States of America.
Didn't use this in 1?
No, this 3. Wow. 3 was when this one came out.
I just associate it with 1 because Rocky and this song are so synonymous.
Yeah, I mean, they honestly had multiple songs. My favorite Rocky movie is Rocky 4. But I feel like if I would have just played the one where he starts training in Russia, people would have gone, well, it's just music. There's not words. And then you have the one like, there's no easy way.
Oh, yeah, that is a good one.
There's no shortcut home. Like, I love working out to Rocky music.
I thought this was probably the case. This song was written for Rocky 3.
Yeah.
So essentially, I guess Sylvester Stallone had asked for permission to use Another One Bites the Dust.
Okay.
And they said, Queen said, no, thank you. And so they went to Survivor, the band Survivor, and to make this song for this movie.
Wow. That's impressive.
I hope they think.
Which they had to Sylvester think about it, because in Rocky 2, he wastes all his money quickly because he's never had money in his life, and he fought Apollo Creed, and money comes in, and he buys a black jacket with a tiger on the back of it. So that's probably why when Survivors, I'm sure there's a whole story behind it, but they're probably looking at Rocky 2 and maybe Rocky 1 and going, how do we make a song that really describes?
This story is bananas. One of the guitarists had to use a partially broken guitar that he glued back together because their first two albums were unsuccessful and they were really poor. And they thought they were going to get dumped by their label. And
that is fascinating.
Then this happens.
It
was number one for 6 weeks, Mike, in the United States.
Wow. Okay.
My sports opinion is less of a sports opinion, more of a sports story. Mike, you keep bringing up Michael Jordan versus everybody else and how Patrick Mahomes is making everybody look like that. I recently saw a different, unique take on this because you have never heard of the horse sham, have you?
No.
Have you ever heard of Secretariat?
Yes.
All right. Everybody knows Secretariat. Secretariat was the most dominant horse ever. In the Kentucky Derby in 1973, I believe, they didn't really keep times, but they kind of had general times. The horse sham ripped two teeth out at the starting gate whenever he took off. His two teeth fell out. He was bleeding from the start. The Secretariat finished with a time of 1:59 2/5. That was the time that he finished at the Kentucky.
By far the fastest.
The first time anybody had ever broken 2 minutes, for one, and the fastest ever. Sham finished with 1:59 4/5. He also broke 2 minutes, but because he finished second, it was 2.5 lengths that he lost to Secretariat there. He almost did it. He almost beat Secretariat. He has still, to this day, the second fastest time at the Kentucky Derby, but because Secretariat went on to win the Triple Crown, and because Secretariat was so dominant in the other two, in the Preakness, he ran away with it. I think, actually, no, it was 2.5 lengths there, but it was the Belmont Stakes.
Where he won like a million.
31 yeah. lengths is what he won by. And at one point, this horse was running, and the jockey on the horse said, I had to stop running this horse. I had to pull him up because he was going to explode his heart. Like I could literally feel his heart was going to explode because he was trying to keep up with Secretariat.
Didn't they find out when Secretariat died, he had a heart 2 times bigger than most other horses?
So I do know.
I think you could see how I might wonder.
So Sham was the same. I have a note here. Okay. Sham died of a heart attack in 1993 at the age of 23. He had been studded out for a long time. His heart weighed 18 pounds and was twice the size of an average thoroughbred.
Oh, wow.
It was the same with Secretariat, but it was the same with him as well. So I just thought that was an interesting story. We all know Secretariat. We're all going to know Patrick Mahomes, but the Josh Allens and Lamar Jacksons, we're going to tell our kids how great they were. Our kids are going to tell those stories, but they're going to be just like I was with my dad. Yeah, I'm sure Roger Staubach's great, but is he Troy Aikman? You know, that was when it was in my mind was I didn't see it, so I don't know. And that's what's going to end up happening with Mahomes and these guys in their career. So I just thought that was a fun little story. And then for me, it is the song by the Steeler's Wheel. And it is from the movie Reservoir Dogs.
Yep.
This Michael Madsen played a sociopath in this movie. Like, he was a sociopath. He's alone in this garage. He's got one dead body laying on the ground, and he thinks it's hilarious.
He's living his best life.
And he's got a dude tied up and taped up, and he's bleeding from everywhere, and he's just like, you know what? Let me play a song just to set the tone. And it was this song, great song, creepy moment as this dude's getting ready to cut off somebody's ear. It's an awesome movie, and I really enjoyed it, but this song has always stuck with me in the middle of it all. It has always stuck with me every time I hear it, that's the scene I think of.
It's probably going to be really hard to, I don't know if you want to pray in that moment or whatever, but to focus, knowing the guy's picking out the song he's going to murder you too.
Well, he's holding a straight blade in his hand, and he's like, you know what? Let me see how this goes with you. Right now, though, Kevin, let's give something away!
877-881-1053, caller number 10. We'll win a pair of tickets to go see Billy Idol and Joan Jett on May the 7th at Dickies Arena in Fort Worth. Caller number 10 right now, 877-881-1053.
And it is time for Mike Likes It.
Okay, so big night tonight for my son. He is a sophomore. He goes to Bishop Lynch, and they're playing. They've had a couple scrimmages, but this is their first varsity game that counts, and he thinks he might be starting at third base. I'll find out when I get there tonight at 6 o'clock. he was so excited this morning and also nervous. And I was like, that's good you're nervous. That means it means something. But it brought me back to my feeling of making varsity for the first time. Now, I remember my first ever varsity baseball game. I know we won. I don't remember everything I did or didn't do, but I remember my first at bat. And I got into the batter's box. We had a long bus trip. We went and played John Tyler.
Oh, yeah.
And I can remember shaking in the batter's box. Just the nerves and just feeling so nervous about this at bat. Now, I don't think I had that exact same feeling my second at bat in the game. And I pitched that game and I don't remember feeling super nervous on the mound. I was excited, but I just remember getting in the batter's box and I was like shaking. I could physically feel myself shaking. And then I'm sure nobody saw in the stands. Like, you know how you feel like you're shaking, yeah. But.
And you think everybody can tell?
Everybody can tell
the
or whatever.
Knows.
But it's such an awesome feeling for something to mean that much to you. And then you get over that nervousness, and or at least hopefully you do. And then you start just performing up to your God-given ability. But, Corey, I know you
played...
All
that work you put in, you just kind of... Now instinct takes over.
Yeah, and I know you played football and baseball at Bryan Adams. I don't know what... Was it your junior year you made?
My freshman year was my varsity in baseball. And we had a really talented senior group. I was just on the team just to kind of be there. I would play some JV games, but they would also move me back and forth.
Yeah.
But my first game that I played, it was a tournament. And it was just kind of like... It was kind of like just nobody was there, you know, nobody, because those tournaments, it was maybe Maybank or maybe it was Euless, but nobody was around at the tournament. So nobody that I knew.
Okay.
I didn't really care. Now, football was a different story, though, because I do remember kind of seeing the stands. I didn't really know what I was doing. Like, honestly, I'd had an injury the year before I had taken my knee out. And so I was kind of nervous about all that. But I do remember being nervous because the action was different. Once the kickoff happened, the hits were louder. And I was like, oh, this is different than being on JV. And so...
Did you say who you guys were playing that first game?
That would be Fort Worth Trimble Tech.
Okay.
Was who we were playing in that first game. And it was a blast. I had a great time. But it was a little nerve-wracking. The thing that I've... The biggest nerves I've ever gotten were whenever I went with you to the Rough Riders Park to hit off of you.
Before the dirt game started.
Before
the Heroes game.
The dirt people, so great to let us do that. That was an awesome moment. And Kevin, you were sitting front row kind of cheering me on there. But I remember being fine. It was a little nerve-wracking to be in that locker room with Pudge and Rick Carlisle and all those people. But then when I went out, I was like, I'm fine. I've hit baseballs plenty of times. But then I turn around and there's like 4,000 or 5,000, 6,000 people in the stands wanting to see something. And I was like, oh, I've never hit in front of this many people before. That was a little nervous until I got my first swing in.
Kevin, in high school, was there a moment, something that you, whether it was debate team or something that you remember being super nervous and excited for?
Yeah, it was because I did love debate. I made it to the finals as in one of my first tournaments and I got freaking destroyed, man. But like, I remember I was like, oh yeah, this is cool. It was weird because I didn't feel pressure until I got to the final. And then I was like, I could actually win this thing. I very, very much did not win the thing.
But so you didn't perform at your best?
Exactly.
Would you say?
Okay. I probably still would have lost either way. Yeah. Because I think that person was like, because I was a freshman.
Experienced.
And they used a couple words. I was like, dude, I don't even know what that word means. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't perform my best. I probably would have lost anyway, but yeah, it affected me for sure.
Alec, how about you?
So for me, my main sports were track and cross country. Cross country, probably the biggest of the two. And that was the earlier season. So that was the first time I really experienced it at the high school level. And I was terrified. I was like, and our meets were early in the morning too, so I had to wake up at like 5. I was so tired that I didn't have time to immediately think about it. But once you set foot on the trail and you kind of walk it for the first time, the heart started pounding. Like, I felt like I was going to puke. I really did. It was just like the adrenaline started flowing. Yeah. But the second they fire that little cap gun off and it's time to go, you know, you kind of forget about all that. But then you remember it's a team sport after. So you're just waiting for them to calculate the results electronically. And you start thinking, did I do good enough? Did I finish in a good enough spot to put us over that hump and get first place? So really, I was more nervous when I finished the race my first time because they took like a good 15 minutes to give us results. I'm like, and I didn't do great my first race because I was nervous. So I was like, did I do great? Did throw up after the race. That was fun. Mm-hmm. And it was mainly out of nervousness that I didn't do good enough, but we got first place. So after that, it was kind of a wash. But leading into it, that morning of, once you step on that trail for the first time, you're like, oh, this is real. This is actually happening.
Yeah. When Avery was running track, he got into track for cross country. And then they were like, hey, but, and when you're not doing cross country, you're running track. And they were like, hey, he was like, I want to run the 200. And I was like, all right. Like, I've seen you run. I don't know if that's going to happen. But he gets out there and Mike, he was not last, but second to last. And the field left him like Secretariat left everybody else at the Belmont. And when he got done, he was like, I was so scared. Like, just being on the track at the time, he was so nervous about it all.
And I think that's, it's the thing you miss that, I don't know, you'll never, that it's really experience. Tough to experience that again, is that feeling. Now, there can be, to Kevin's point, there can be you're going up against a certain opponent or it's a certain round in the playoffs and stuff like that. I'm sure, obviously, never playing football. I bet adults now or even kids today can tell you when they either got to play at Texas Stadium or got to play at AT&T Stadium, the feeling of being on the Cowboys football field.
I can't tell you how many players over the years at the old Texas Stadium talked about how winning that first playoff game was cool, but it also meant, at least for the districts we covered, that they were going to get to play at Texas Stadium. And that was like the biggest.
Because now it's just AT&T just hosts the championship games. You can play in Frisco.
Yeah.
At the, I call it the practice field, but it's a really nice practice field.
I remember, from our field, you've driven by Brian Adams baseball field before, but going from that, it's what it is now, a lot nicer than what we had. They'd done a lot of work to it. But when we played a playoff game at Highland Park, I'd never been on a field like that before. I was like, it felt like a minor league baseball field. I was like, they got brick walls behind home plate. What is this? You know, like everything we had was all chain link fence. So everything just looked a little different. And for us, for the kids at Plano East, they looked very comfortable. But for all of us, this was the first time we experienced that kind of environment. It was a blast, though. It was like, I remember there was a bunch of Plano East guys and they were harassing my third baseman. And he had he'd let one go by during warmups. And I was like, I don't know if I like this. So whenever they hit the grounder for me to warm up, I launched it and it went over him and it hit one of them in the throat.
Oh my God.
Plano East, where you need to bring a lot of extra baseballs because they're all on top of the school. Yep. Every foul ball goes on top of the school and you're just like, well, it's more baseballs. Still Plano though. Yeah. So anyways, that's what I'm going to be doing after the show today.
Are you nervous then? Sorry to jump in there.
I think I would be. He's going to pitch tomorrow. They play Parrish, and he's going to be a relief pitcher.
Okay.
If he was the starting pitcher, I don't know if nervous. I'd be excited.
Okay.
About it. I think I would be nervous if, like, he was. I know this is, hopefully he will do this in April / I guess May, is pitching a playoff game where that'd there's awesome. A do or die sense to it.
What a beautiful day, though, to get his first varsity.
That's true.
Because last week, like at this time, freezing our butts off.
Would have hated that. From the 817, I played catch with Mike Bassick once. I was so nervous, but he held me and sang a song to me, and it calmed me down. What songs do you like to sing to calm people down, Mike?
I don't know. Is this when our Tolo, who...
I think it. I think it might be
over to the park over here.
I think it might be.
Did you sing a song to him, or said you held him?
I mean,
so
we talked. We talked. We had a catch, and we played talk,
dude.
We played talk. We played catch, and we had a talk.
That's good stuff, Mike. I'm really hoping the best for him. Let us know how that goes.
Unless he does bad, I'll be like, he's screwed.
Yeah, if he does bad,
you're at least gonna be nice to these. Okay. So, how do you think? do you already have in your mind, like, how am I going to soften the blow if it goes poorly? Or are you just going to be like, you saw it. What are you doing?
I try. I can tell you I failed many times as a sports parent and done and said the wrong things. So I don't know. The other day, my son, who plays on the ninth grade basketball team, which it's a pathetic watch every time.
Jeez.
Is one of the parents like, don't be too hard on them because they almost blew like a 20-point lead in the fourth quarter. And I was like, I'm also going to be honest with them. I'm not going to lie to the kid.
Yeah.
You know, I think too many parents lie. You did great. My butt, you did great.
I think
everybody saw it.
I think a great approach is just let them tell you how they did and then agree with them. If they think they stunk at something, you can agree with them.
Well, that's
and
not
then
a
if
bad
they
idea.
Ask for more criticism, yeah. You obviously have a lot more knowledge. He knows. He's like, hey, I'm talking to a pro person.
Yeah, but they don't
here.
Like, I'll tell you this, they don't like that at all.
Yeah. I always just try to listen and let them tell me. And then I'll be like, yeah, it wasn't that great.
All right, game of the year tonight.
How are we going to get better? How are we going to get better for next time? Coming up next here on the KNC Masterpiece, it's time for a segment with a great host and a great man, pretty good dad, decent friend. It's the C Block with Corey Majors. Where are we going, Corey? Guys, we're going to do a top 10 officials that you don't want to fight next on the Fan.
That was amazing.